Welcome to Ballistic Radio, the fastest growing gun talk show in the country. Join us. We're going to explore the topics of firearms, self-defense, and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough, you need dynamite to take them off. Now, here's your host, John Johnston, on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Good evening and welcome to Ballistic Radio presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Fast approaching 100,000 Facebook fans. Thank you very much, everybody. Anyway, co-hosting with me this evening is neither Andy Ulrich or Matt the Minion, because they both had better things to do than hang out with me, which is really, really sad, but I am still very excited about tonight's show. We're going to be joined by New York Times best-selling author and Pulitzer Prize winner Stephen Hunter. Written some of my favorite books, actually. Been a fan for a while, Point of Impact. Turned that into a movie called Shooter that Mark Wahlberg starred in. Bunch of other things. He's actually got a new book out that we're going to be talking about this evening. Before we get to Mr. Hunter, though, just a quick update and also, too, a reminder. This segment brought to you by Colt. Colt, the legend continues. See, I'm distracted slightly just because I have no one in the studio to sort of, like, keep me on task and sort of, like, ADHD time here at Ballistic Radio. But also, too, there are several vultures perched outside of my window, actual honest-to-God vultures, and it kind of makes me wonder what sort of Greek god I have offended that has sent this plague upon us. Anyway, I'm going to stop right now because I'm probably not as funny as I think I am. Anyway, just a quick update on the Knights Armament SR-15 Mod 2 rifle endurance test. About 500 rounds into the 20,000 rounds provided by Freedom Munitions. Thanks very much, Freedom. If you guys haven't already, check them out. They've got some really excellent prices on ammunition. I am continuing to be impressed with the Knights rifle, specifically the muzzle brake that's on there, the multi-axis muzzle stability brake, or otherwise known as the MAMS, has been really, really impressive and not as obnoxious as some of the muzzle devices that I have used in the past. Anyway, going to be hitting 1,000 rounds with that sometime this coming week, and then it is going to get sent off to Cerakote to get made up all pretty. I don't know exactly what they're doing to it. Maybe a Hello Kitty rifle. I have not decided yet, and I don't know if it's even up to me or not once it leaves my hands. So we'll see. I'm going to blame them if I get a Care Bear rifle back. It's not something I asked for, I swear. Anyway, we got about 5 minutes left in this segment. I am going to get Mr. Stephen Hunter on the line to talk to us about all of the exciting things that he's got going on right now. So without further ado, joining us this evening, Mr. Stephen Hunter. Stephen, are you there?
I sure am.
I have to say, first of all, thank you very much for joining us on the show this evening.
It's my pleasure, and thank you, John, for your interest. I'm very appreciative.
Oh, well, you say that now. Now, once the show's over, you may go and fire your people for having you come on.
You may also get bored with me in about 7 minutes, so it's both ways.
I doubt that. I think we'll do okay, son. You'd be surprised how fast the show goes. Now, I've actually been a fan of yours for quite some time. Mainly, I think the first novel of yours I read was actually Point of Impact, and you introduced your character Bob Lee Swagger in that one. For those that are maybe not familiar and have not read some of your work, can you, in a nutshell, describe Bob's character and sort of the arc of the series there?
Sure. Bob is a former Vietnam sniper. He was a very good sniper. He has a natural gift for firearms, what people in the community sometimes call the gene that some of the great shooters have. He came back from Vietnam burned up and alcoholic and terminally depressed, and he retreated to a little trailer in Arkansas and drank himself stupid for 10 years. And then he gradually came out of it, and an adventure presented himself to him, and that was Point of Impact. And it got his juices working again. It got his brain working again. It got him reengaged in society. And basically, the thrust of the book, through nine adventures, is watched as he returns to society. And instead of being the isolate, instead of being the loner, instead of being the nothing, you know, that hated gun nut off in the bushes by himself fondling his guns. Instead of being that, he's come back to society. He's joined society. He's contributed to society. He's used his gifts. He's reached out. He's softened his personality. He's learned to love. He's got a family now and a bunch of children. He has hopes for the future. And to me, I was just sort of, I mean, underneath it all, it's sort of the myth of the displaced or the usurped prince. He was one of nature's noblemen. He was given gifts. And yet somehow when he used those gifts, those gifts were used against him, and he was exiled, and he was taught to hate himself and taught to see himself as a loser. And what's happening over the course of the books is he's reasserting himself as, I guess you might say, the warrior prince or the warrior king. And he's understanding how much he has to give and how important it is that he give that. And that's basically what I've done with these books.
Yeah. And I actually think it's interesting, too, and it's sort of a commentary on when, you know, between when you first when you wrote the first novel and, you know, now things have changed quite a bit. And as far as how soldiers are treated, and, you know, it got better after the Gulf War, which is, if I remember correctly, you wrote Point of Impact somewhere around 93
it was. And it was, in my opinion, it was the darkest moment of for gun culture and gun rights in this country. Clinton was the president. They just passed the magazine ban. And universally, we, those of us who love and shoot and respect firearms, were condemned as outlaws and criminals and the worst kind of scum on earth. And one of the reasons I decided to do this was I wanted to fight that stereotype.
Yeah.
And I wanted to show our people as, you know, who we are and what we contribute and what we have contributed. And I wanted to get, I wanted to get us what we deserve, I guess you might say. And so I took the liberal nightmare of the Southern gun nut, the drunken guy with the Mini 14,
right.
Instead of making him the villain as he was in all popular culture, I made him the hero.
Yeah.
And I showed he was smarter and tougher and braver and more creative and had more to give than all the people that were dissing him and that held him in such contempt and who, in fact, knew nothing. And so that was my perverse pleasure. And I think one of the reasons the books are, although I've never articulated that explicitly, I think one of the books, the reason the books have been so successful is because people understood that even without it having been told them, as a manifesto, but they understood it as an emotional and as a logical and as a social position. And at that time, it was really the only place in American popular culture where you could get that kind of an image. And I can't tell you how many letters I got from gun people who were just so pleased to encounter this guy. And believe me, I was pleased to encounter him. I had no idea I'd write 9 books about him, but he just wouldn't go away and had a great life over the last 20 years. It's just been wonderful.
Oh, yeah. And I'd like to get into that a little bit more now. We've run up onto the commercial break. When we get back, we'll discuss some more of Mr. Hunter's books and maybe some of the other things that are going on in popular culture related to firearms news. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough, you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. Also, a reminder, this segment brought to you by Walther and the new PPX. So, anyway, this evening we were having a nice conversation with Mr. Stephen Hunter, New York Times bestselling author and Pulitzer Prize winner. Mr. Hunter, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Excellent.
I'm a little tired of those commercials, but I'm going to stick with you a little while longer.
I appreciate that. You know, it's it's funny. I get tired of them, too, but then it occurs to me that if they weren't there, my show would go from about 42 or 43 minutes
I get that. I get that.
It'd be a 60-minute show, and then I certainly would run out of things to say, because despite what people think, I'm most of the time flying by the seat of my pants. So we were discussing, as far as when Point of Impact came out, that the culture in America, and especially in pop culture in America, there were not very many, for lack of a better term, good guys that were also gun people. And I'd like to discuss that a little bit more. But before we do that, you've got a new book coming out that is got Mr. Swagger as the main character, Sniper's Honor, correct?
That's absolutely correct.
So, and that debuted pretty well on the best seller list, didn't it? I want to say seller.
It has done very well. I'm quite pleased with the reception, and with the reviews, and with the affection that I'm getting. And it's I'm proud of it, as you might imagine. It's not an easy book to write. It arose from the ashes of a book that crashed and burned and didn't work out. And I managed to save an idea from that book, and I found this other idea. And I had I stress I'm a very lucky Joe, because writing the books has become a great deal of fun for me. It's become a very sort of passionate, explosively enjoyable person and pastime, vocation, whatever you want to call it. And I always look forward each day to the work I have to do, and I always feel good at the end of the day when I've done that work. And it's just worked out so well for me. I wish I could share the luck, but you have to make your own luck. What can I say?
Yeah, as someone that has sort of fallen into a pretty nice gig myself, I completely understand what you mean by that. So, with the new book that you've got out, you kind of one of the things that you examine in it is sort of the role of, and I do want to ask a little later on in the show. You focused on long range marksmen in a lot of your books. But one of the things that you sort of bring to the forefront in this latest one is the role that females played on the Russian front, especially in the sniper corps that the Russians had.
That's exactly true. One of my ideas here was that the book that collapsed had a female sniper in it, and it turned out that my publisher, Simon Schuster, they were really taken with the idea of a female sniper. And I said that I'm the only time in history where there's really been organized sniping as sponsored by a military force with female shooters was during the Second World War, where the Soviet Union fielded about 3,000 or 4,000 female snipers, and some of them were very, very effective. Do you want me to write a book about that? Well, they're a little nervous about the past. You know, it's the money is in appealing to the kids these days. So I had to sort of find a way to finesse that story with a story set today in the contemporary world with, recognizable icons like cell phones and satellites and, radios and stuff like that. So I concocted this plot in which Bob Lee Swagger is investigating the fate of a Soviet sniper in World War II who was, not only was she very effective, but at a certain point she was sent on a mission and she not only did she disappear, but she was disappeared. And by was disappeared, what I mean is that the Soviet authorities, as they are wont to do, they wiped out her records, they wiped out her medals, they wiped out her birth certificate. They painted her out of all the official portraits. And one of the questions, of course, that is raised by that circumstance is why? What happened to Millie Petrova? What should she do? Was she a traitor? Did she turn against them? What was it? So I've got Bob and a friend of his trying to figure out what happened to her. But then I cut back to Ukraine, 1944, July, when the Russians were moving back into Ukraine and the Germans were on their long retreat from Stalingrad. Extremely violent period of time. And I set it right on that fault line between the two armies, and I try to invoke as meticulously as possible the Eastern Front. And one of a couple of things going on here didactically. One is I thought that the female sniper could be a great character for popular culture, that we should look up to her, we should understand what she did. And there are millions of people who don't know about her, and I want them to know about her and what she did. I think that's important. I'm a great believer in respecting the history that resulted in where we, why we're speaking in English and not in German. One of the reasons is this young lady. Secondly, I wanted to get Americans to appreciate the Eastern Front, which was incredibly violent and gigantic. I'm just Lord of the Rings for real.
Right.
And it was just an incredible epic of human folly, courage, endurance, evil, slaughter. Every human attribute was multiplied, 200 degrees by the exigencies of the Eastern Front. And I felt that we knew this sort of in the way we know our mother's maiden name, but it wasn't real. It didn't mean much. And I was trying to sort of make it mean something and make us understand. I also have always been drawn, the evil of the Nazis and the evil of the Soviet apparatus of Joe Stalin are such vivid forces for destruction in the world. And I thought it'd be really, really interesting to put someone decent and heroic in play between the two of those forces. And Millie ends up being hunted both by the NKVD and the SS.
Right.
And that was great fun coming up with them, what I'm selling is little squiggles of brain electricity. If I'm provoked, I'm hoping to capture my provocation in prose and sell it to other people, and perhaps I can educate them, perhaps I can enlighten them, perhaps I can teach them, perhaps it'll just be, a good vacation for them. But I need the provocation in order to sell it to them. And I found in the Eastern Front extraordinary provocation.
Yeah. And I have to say, I've been remiss. I've still got the third bullet sitting on my desk, and that's where I've been. I've got the third bullet and then Sniper's Honor sitting there getting ready to read both of them. I've just not had the time. I'm really looking forward to this one. Just because it's kind of like you said, even for World War II, or people that are interested in World War II, the Eastern Front is oftentimes overlooked.
And it's so wrong that it is, because it was so important, and it has so much to do with why the world is what it is today. And this book looks at that phenomenon. I think you will see in it, again, I'm selling here, but I think one of the things is you will see in it the seeds of many modern pathologies.
Right. And we got about 2 minutes left in this segment, and then I'm going to have to make you sit through some more commercials. I'm sorry for that. Well, something I'm curious about, the vast majority of your books have snipers featured in them one way or another. And even, some of the non-Swagger novels as well. What has drawn you to them? Why are those fine young men and women so often written about as far as your stories go?
It's so hard to know why you do what you do. A lot of your sort of attraction to themes and ideas is totally subconscious. And it's very difficult to put it into words. And I've also got this suspicion that if I try and put it into words, I somehow tamper with it, and that's not a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
For me, most of the books begin with guns. I was incredibly preternaturally sensitive to guns from a very early age. And the guns were important to me. I've been engaged in one way or another in gun culture my whole life. And I have to say that it's been, as I said before, it's been a wonderful life. And I have gotten so much out of my fascination, my interest, my education, my experience with the people I've met, with the places I've gone. And the guns have never let me down, and it's continued. I'm 68 now, and I'm just as enthusiastic, you know, about them now as I was when I was 8 or 18 or 28 or 38. It's just been a ongoing predilection that has it's one of the things, if you have a passion, one of the practical results of passion is energy. And as you might imagine, writing these damn books takes a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And you're all by yourself in a room night after night after night. And you've got to get a charge from somewhere. And if you don't have a passion, something that really agitates you intellectually and imaginatively, I don't know where you'd get that energy. And I know, I talk to many people who are extremely talented who will never write their books. And somehow their books die around chapter 3. And one of the reasons, you know, why you're talking to me and not to them is because my passion became my energy. And so I managed to write what I call the two most important books in any words in any book, which are Z and End.
And that seems to be it. And I had a private conversation with Patrick Rothfuss once, who's a fantasy author, and I was talking with him about it. And he said, you know, the only difference between me and anybody else is I actually wrote the book.
Yeah, you got it.
And that's it. I got to put you back on hold. I'm sorry.
Okay,
when we get back, we'll talk some more. And right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group, makers of firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms, parts, and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Bear, Sig Sauer, and many more, as well as premium ARs. Whether you are looking to protect yourself, a first-time gun buyer, or a competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for SIG parts and accessories. Right now, we are talking with Stephen Hunter, New York Times best-selling author and Pulitzer Prize winner. Mr. Hunter.
I'm here.
Excellent. And once again, sorry for the commercials. So,
that's okay.
I like having the show, though, and it's funny. There's like this weird, like, money thing that I need to have the show, and I don't know.
Isn't that annoying? Yeah.
My way too. You know, it's funny how that works. So, anyway, we were discussing before the break why you write about snipers, and I kind of want to sort of shift gears just a little bit. One of the things that has probably kept me coming back to your books, in addition to the characters, which I find relatable in a very weird sense, but one of the things that I've really liked about them is that a lot of times when I read a book that's got firearms, or even when I see a movie that's got firearms in it, the technical errors that the creators of whatever content I happen to be viewing really just kind of suck all the joy out of it. And your books are very technically accurate. How important has that been for you, do you think, to stay true to that? And why do you think not many people do it?
Well, I think many people don't do it, and I'm talking about other authors, because they don't know and because they just take the guns for granted in the way that the movies take the guns for granted. And I think journalism takes guns for granted. There's a lot of people who feel that they don't have to know about the guns.
Right.
The guns are, you know, so spectacularly uninteresting. The only thing you have to know about the gun is that you put a bullet in it. They call them bullets always, never cartridges. And you pull the trigger and something dies. And, of course, you know, probably 10 billion rounds are shot a year and fired a year. And, you know, a very infinitesimally tiny percentage of those actually kill a human being. So clearly there's something going on with guns other than killing. For me, as I mentioned earlier, I was very attracted to guns throughout my whole life. And when it came time for me to try and write books that I could sell, I thought that there was nothing in the marketplace as what I imagined. And what I imagined would be a series of books that were firearm literate. that were about the guns, that talked about how the guns were used, that portrayed the guns accurately, or as accurately as possible. And I'm the first to admit I've made some mistakes because it is a very highly technical field.
Yeah.
And I thought that if I got the guns right, I would have something that nobody else had, and that there should be an audience out there. I had no idea how big or how small that would at least appreciate that. And so I, from the very beginning, my idea was to get the guns as right as I could get them. And I remember the first novel I sold was called The Master Sniper.
Mm-hmm.
And the heroes in it were American, was an American OSS officer and his technical sergeant, pal. And they both carried Thompson submachine guns. And it was very important to me to make sure that it was not just a Tommy gun, but that it was an M1A1 Thompson submachine gun with the bolt on the side instead of on the top, you know, like an M1928 Thompson submachine gun. So I had very explicitly written that. And the copy reader, you know, these books, the book was sold. I was very happy. And the editor didn't pay much attention to the gun stuff. But the copy reader got it in her mind that she changed it from M1A1 Thompson submachine gun to something like Big Black Thunder Gun or some ridiculous construction like that.
Huh.
And, I mean, I hit the roof. I said, no, that's not, you can't do that. Just leave the guns alone as I have written them.
Right.
Somehow I won that argument, and the book was a relatively successful. I wouldn't call it one of my up to my later standards, but it was a pretty good little book. And I was so proud that I got most of the gun stuff right. And I heard from people all over the country and eventually all over the world who really appreciated the effort I'd taken in getting details like that so right. It made me think that, again, it confirmed my notion that there was a market that appreciated that. And so it's sort of the positive reinforcement. You know, now and then I'll get a book review and someone will say, well, the book is pretty good, but he ruins it with all that gun junk. Who cares if it's an M1A1 or a M1928 or a Big Black Thunder machine gun? It doesn't matter. Well, it doesn't matter to them, but it matters to me. And again, getting that stuff right is deeply pleasurable to me. And in that pleasure is energy, in that energy is work, and in that work is ultimately writing THE and END. So that is at the very core of it, to try to get that stuff right.
Yeah, and that seems to be, like I said, it's, you know, I've been a fan of your work for quite some time, and that has always been one of the things that's kept me coming back to it is I can actually read your stuff without getting a headache. And I know that seems such a minor nitpick, but you understand. Not everyone does, so.
I get it. Yeah, I do.
Out of curiosity, we got another couple minutes left before the next commercial break, and then you don't have to sit through another one, so that's something. Out of the books that you've written, which one's your favorite?
You see, they're like children. You can't really have a favorite. You know that, you know, you've sat up with them late at night when they've misbehaved or been ill. You know how much you went through to get them educated and dressed. But there comes a moment when you stick them, you've got to shove them out into the world and say goodbye to them. And sometimes they do well and sometimes they don't. It's always to me, you know, when I look at, say, my Amazon reviews, and some of the books people really love, but then there are other books that haven't seemed to have done as well or attracted as much affection. And I don't know why. I mean, I don't know why they think book C is better than book D and why not so many people seem to like book D. Writing book D was just as hard as writing book C. And I'm not sure where my failure was with the bad book. I mean, was it lack of concentration? Was it lack of belief? Was it laziness? Maybe I should have taken it through another book. Maybe the concept was wrong to begin with, and there was just, given the bad concept, there was just a limit to how good the book could be. It couldn't be as good as the other one because the concept is wrong. So to me, I just don't know the answer to any of those questions. So to me, it's very hard to have a favorite. Maybe the favorites, I mean, one of them I hated so much, I was drunk. I hadn't got myself drunk to finish it every night. I've always had drinking problems, but this one really almost sent me into the bin, let me tell you. And finally, after many travails, was published. And, yeah, you know, as predictable, no one seems to really like it much. But now and then I get an email on it or a letter or something telling me it's the greatest book ever written. And I don't know, maybe that guy is drunk too. I don't know why or how this happens. I mean, to me, it's a miracle that a book, you know, that you finish the damn thing and you get it out there. And at a certain point, you just have to let it go and hope, like a kid, hope that it does well. And if it does or it doesn't, there's really not much you can do about it. But I don't really have a favorite. It's not, my mind doesn't work that way.
Okay. Well, I was hoping I'd catch you on an answer or something like that, because I know some of my friends that have more than one kid, they'll tell people that they don't have a favorite one. Then you get a drink or two in them, you talk to them, it's like, yeah, I don't like Bobby that much, but Susie's okay.
Not so. Me. I could never do that.
I love my
kids, and I love my books.
Well, there you go. I got to throw you back on hold, and then we'll be right back. We're talking with Stephen Hunter. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough you need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by the Polypalooza 2 Memorial Training Conference. Join some of the top trainers in the country August 16th and 17th. The Raven Concealment Systems facility in Northern Ohio, where they will be teaching some of the most vital self-defense skills that every armed citizen should know. Lesson blocks will cover a myriad of topics suitable for shooters and students of all skill levels. All skill levels. If you've not gone to a training class in the past outside of your concealed carry training, this would be a great place to find out what you don't know. For more information, click the Polypalooza 2 tab on ballisticradio.com. Registration's only $250, and all of the money is going to benefit the Paul Gomez Children's Trust. Remember, click the Polypalooza tab on the ballisticradio.com homepage for more information. Save the date, August 16th and 17th. Not only will I be there, as will the minion, Matt, but my father will also be joining everyone. So if you want to see someone that can make fun of me with a talent that defies description, you want to come to this, so it should be worth the price of admission. Anyway, we were talking with Mr. Stephen Hunter. Stephen, are you still there?
I am still here.
See, no more commercials.
You're doing a great job. I really enjoyed this.
Well, I really do appreciate you coming on. It's just worked out really well. And
okay, here's what you should really appreciate. I put off the cocktail hour for an hour to accommodate you. Oh. So I am looking forward to jump into a pool of vodka as soon as we get off the air.
You know, it's funny. A lot of my guests have that reaction, I've heard. It's like try and drown in it, actually. No, I do appreciate you taking the time, and especially giving us a full hour. I know that a lot of shows like to just kind of sort of have people in quick, out quick, and I'm always appreciative to people that will put up with my eccentricities and devote the entire hour with me. So something I'm curious about, you were a film critic for many years. That's actually what you won your Pulitzer Prize for. They made one of your books into a movie, Shooter, with Mark Wahlberg.
Yep.
How'd you feel about that?
I can say nothing bad about them because they were very decent to me. Mark Wahlberg was very decent to me, and the whole thing occurred because Mark said yes.
Right.
You know, I mean, in today's Hollywood, the young, powerful actors have a great deal of say, and if they agree to make a movie, then that movie happens. And he agreed to make this movie, and it has done me nothing but good. I still hear about it all the time, and obviously it comes up all the time.
Right.
What do I think of the movie? I thought that the original movie that they shot was much better than the movie they released. I did not care. I've been honest with them about this, so I can be honest to you about it. I did not. That ending where Bob goes to the ridiculous hunting lodge.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the fat, it was like something out of Bertolt Brecht. All the fat capitalists are drinking whiskey in crystal tumblers out of the decanter and cackling and chortling about their evil. And he kicks down the door and kills everybody. That was added at the last moment. It had nothing to do with my book.
Yeah.
It had no logical connection to that character. It was totally arbitrary. I mean, it was, could have done that in the beginning, for God's sake.
Right.
So I wish they hadn't done that. I would love to see Antoine Fuqua's original cut. I will say this, that they were very, one of the things they got about from the book that I appreciated was careful, realistic gun handling. And every shooter in the cast went to a training school, a front sight training academy. And I hear all, one of the reasons the movie has become almost, I wouldn't say mythical, but why something of a cult item, despite the ridiculous ending, again, one of the things people are understanding is that they're seeing gun handling and gun skill at a very high level. And it's completely unlike most other Hollywood films in that respect. The two other movies that are, it's always linked with in terms of good gun handling are a new one that's just been added, and that is Lone Survivor, where the gun handling is very good.
Right.
And also a movie called Way of the Gun, an mm-hmm. obscure, even more obscure movie, a little thriller from many years back, in which the guys were very serious
right.
about the way the actors handled the guns and the way they moved with guns and how they shot and what the guns were capable of. So in that respect, I think the movie was very well done, and it seems to have, it will not go away on cable.
Right.
It's probably been shown more on a Turner broadcasting than any movie in history. I'm exaggerating a little, but it has had a great afterlife.
Right.
And it did better on video, and it does well on cable. It always gets high numbers on cable than it did in the theater. So all in all, it was a very positive experience with me. I the image of, you know, Mark Wahlberg shooting Ned Beatty in the head, yeah, I would prefer to forget. And when I watch it on video, as I do occasionally, I'll watch it until they get to that ludicrous final scene, and then I'll just skip that. And,
yeah.
Those are my feelings. I wish it had been better. I wish it had done better. But I'm glad it was as good as it was, and I'm glad it did as well as it did.
Right. Now, we've got we got another 4 minutes or so, and then they're going to start a Metallica song playing, and then I've only got 60 seconds left with you at that point. But I'm curious about, I've been, obviously I do a little bit of research before I have guests come on and all that. They're actually making, well, they're rumored to be making probably my favorite book of yours into a film. And I'm curious as to whether or not that's still proceeding forward or not. Dirty White Boys, the guys that made Game of Thrones, are they still talking about that? Or
oh, they're very serious about that. This is a late development that I'm very excited about. These two guys, obviously, given the success of Game of Thrones, could have made any movie they wanted.
Right.
Because they're the hottest licks in Hollywood.
Right.
And they decided to make Dirty White Boys, and this is the one time in their power where in their careers they're like Orson Welles in Hollywood in 1940. He gets to make one movie any way he wants to. And after that, he'll have a track record, and maybe he'll get to make more movies, and maybe he won't. And that's where these two guys are.
Right.
And in talking to them, I have to say they sound great. And they're very enthusiastic about the project. They're very excited about it. They want to make the book as close to the book as possible and as politically incorrect as the book was and as honest as the book was. And so I have nothing but excitement for them. And as far as I know, you know, it's not going to happen for another year or so because they've got to finish up Game of Thrones.
Right.
And but I have nothing but the highest hope and optimism for that project. And they say things to me that every novelist would love to hear a filmmaker say. So I have real high hopes, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, no, I was excited to hear about it too, and it's actually funny because, you know, the FCC watches me relatively closely, so I can't even necessarily talk about the book as much as I would like to. But the reason that they said, I guess they initially gained interest in the book is the opening line to the novel, which, once again, can't say on the radio, but it's probably one of the more just sort of upfront opening lines ever and sort of sets the tone pretty well. For anyone listening, it's a great standalone novel to check out. You know, that fits into the overall world that you've created pretty well. But I don't know. I was super excited to hear about it, too. We got another minute left. Do you have anything else you're working on right now that you're looking forward to?
Well, I'm actually going to let my friend Swagger off the hook for a while, let him rock on his front porch. I think he's earned it. I'm doing a novel now set in, and it won't be, it's a very violent novel, I'll tell you that. It's set in London in 1888. If that rings a bell, it should, because of the 3 months between August and November 1988, there was a guy walking around a part of London called Whitechapel.
Right.
And he killed five women very, very nastily. And he has entered the lexicon as Jack the Ripper.
Well, that's...
And the name of the book is I, Ripper, and I've come up with a very interesting solution to the mystery. And it's just been, again, it's been great fun.
Well, now...
I'll probably go back to...
No, I was going to say, I'm definitely looking forward to that. I'm sorry that I have to cut you off because, like I said, they only give us so much time here. Thanks for joining us this evening, Mr. Hunter. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you, John. You did a great job.
Oh, thanks. You as well, sir. So next week we are going to be doing the much looked forward to self-defense on a budget episode. We're going to be talking about some of the more affordable firearms that you can purchase that are actually likely to work, which is, you know, sort of important. Anyway, remember, you can always check out our website, BallisticRadio.com, for the past shows. Like our Facebook page at Facebook.com/BallisticRadio. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next Sunday at 7 p.m.